Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Aloha and ciao.
Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Buongiorno?
Yeah,
there you go. That works. I was wondering, are we going to do that or are we going to do breeds of dogs?
Aloha and ciao both can be used as a greeting or a goodbye, right? And then
can ciao be used as a hello?
I'm pretty sure. I remember hearing that at some point.
Huh. Maybe someone just wanted to get away from you.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we have a very important episode here today.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what we're going to do, but first what we're going to do is we're going to solve, according to Science Alert, with their publishing cooperation Business Insider, they have an article that came out today, 9 phenomena that science still can't explain. We're going to explain those, all of them.
Really? All 9 of them?
Well, probably 7 out of 9. But anyhow, before that, I want to warn everybody, look around, look below you, look to your side, look all over.
Yep.
Because we're being invaded.
What? Is this going to be like, you know, by cosmic rays or by bad vibes or what?
Yeah, wait a minute. Is this them bad vibes I've been hearing all about trying to invade our space?
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to give you a new term for this because the scientific community does not have a cool term for it, and I have discovered the right term for this.
Okay.
Raver squirrels.
Raver squirrels?
We're being invaded by raver squirrels.
Oh, man, with the little tiny adorable glow sticks, and they're just sucking about on the little pacifiers. Just about.
And you know where they are?
They're giving each other back rubs.
Everywhere. Everywhere. A Wisconsin biologist shocked to find out that when they looked at certain species of squirrels underneath the UV light, he had one under his bird feeder and a squirrel went up there and it glowed hot pink.
Now, wait a minute. Okay. Now, there are some animals that naturally phosphoresce or luminous, like scorpions will, especially just after sundown, will appear to glow because they fluoresce. That's what it is. They naturally fluoresce. But then also we use that as markers to test like biological tinkerings, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, the researchers found that they studied 135 species of squirrel and came to the conclusion that 3 species of flying squirrel, the northern Humboldt's flying squirrel, and according to the New York Times, glimmered pink under southern, northern, and Humboldt, glimmered pink under UV light.
Is this okay? And we're fairly certain that these aren't like, you know, escaped experimental squirrels.
Brian, I make no guarantees.
I was about to say we can't be guaranteed of anything
there, but I think that, you know, this is they watched that Brady Bunch episode with the rabbits that got dyed orange. So.
Let me wrap my head around this. So this is the same squirrel under a certain UV light.
Yes.
That we're looking at right now. So we are seeing 2 squirrels, 1 regular colored, and then apparently you throw this light on it, and man, it looks all hot pink and light blue.
Looks, to be honest, like it's wearing the old hypercolor T-shirts.
Yeah.
which I suppose are about due for a comeback. It's been long enough. So, and nobody knows why, or if they have they always been this way, and just somebody finally noticed.
I think that's the case. Is it may have always been something, and then you know, sometimes there are phenomenon that you observe, and you're like, oh, that's cool. Like you know, the whole Apple FaceTime bug, right? How it will you call somebody like group whatever, and you can hear before they pick up,
right?
Lots of people know. I noticed that. I just thought that was just a thing that FaceTime did. I didn't realize, stop to think like, no, that's really bad. That's a security breach. That's a horrible thing, right? But finally Apple realized, oh, yeah, we need to fix that. Sometimes you have things where you see stuff and you're like, well, you know, okay, I guess it's a thing they do. People would know and talk about it. These researchers are like, no, nobody's ever pointed out that certain squirrels glow under a UV light.
Do we have any idea of how much of the squirrel pop is day glowing as we very speak?
Well, they said like three species of flying squirrels, so, and they're pretty common.
In the study published in the Oxford Journal of Mammalogy, in their abstract, they tested 109 museum specimens and 5 wild specimens.
And they found what? How many of them? What percentage were glowy?
It's not in the abstract.
Oh, okay.
They found good times all night long with these squirrels, man. They're apparently they all gather at a warehouse. Wow.
So,
realizing that ravers do have a lot in common with squirrels. They congregate at night in empty warehouses.
Act really frenetic, run back and forth.
Yeah. You know.
I have a proposal to the Weird Things research team. That's everybody listening.
Okay.
If you have a UV light, want to get a UV light?
Man, we got.
Tell us what else glows out there in nature.
We got
squirrels, raccoons,
your room.
Yeah, possums. We actually need a special chemical to make that happen. But yeah, what else? What else is out there? Rabbit animals. Let us know what else glows.
You know, we got a squirrel that is living in our backyard. I'll try to spot it and hit it with a spotlight. We haven't named him because we're pretty sure Kepler's
name is Morty the squirrel.
Kepler's going to get him any minute now. Like, so we're not trying. We're trying not to get too attached.
Keep the name for Mortimer.
Yeah. Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Now that we've announced everybody needs to go out and do that. Really quick update. SpaceX tested yesterday the Raptor engine. The Raptor engine is the methane burning engine that they're going to be using for the Starship, which is their next generation rocket, which will be able to go to, you know, everywhere, the moon, Mars, all of that, and replace the Falcon 9. It is a very, very, very big rocket. It's, you know, like more than twice as powerful as their last one. And they lit this thing up and it was a beast. And
dude, that's great.
Yay.
And everything was nominal. Everything, I'm saying nominal because we're talking about rockets. Everything was good.
Yes, apparently, yeah, Elon Musk retweeted it. You know, you can see the burn, which is cool.
Wow.
And what's cool is what we're going to see in the next couple years between, you have SpaceX with this, and then you have Blue Origin. It's like, I think the BE-4 or BA-4, their rocket engines, which are going to be used by ULA, those things are super huge and incredible powerful as well. Methane burning, too. That's the new thing. They're all doing it. So it's kind of an exciting time. For the longest period, since like the Saturn V rocket engines, we really hadn't made major, we've had incremental improvements, but the fact that we started buying Russian and actually like leftover Soviet rocket engines to power a lot of our launches kind of shows you just how behind we got in rocket development. But that seems to be about to change considerably.
So you said this was running on methane?
Yeah.
Is that because if you look at it, there's a brief flash of green. That'll be interesting. I don't know if that's just a lens artifact or something.
So that was some speculation on Reddit. And the theories were either it could be there's a copper lining or it could be an artifact of the camera.
Okay.
For that. But they seem to think it might be like a copper line and not the igniter or not the way that the methane was burning.
Well, and I guess the other nice thing is running on methane, you know, and maybe this is way too early to be thinking about it, but we can make methane out there, you know, whereas solid rocket fuel, you know, you take whatever you got, but we can live off the land.
Yeah, like what the Falcon 9 uses, you know, RP-1, which is basically kerosene, which you need hydrocarbons and all that. You know, the hydrogen is even more available out there in space. You just need water and electrolysis. But the problem with hydrogen is storage. Hydrogen is really a difficult one to sort of store for long periods of time. And methane offers a lot of advantages over that.
By the way, did you guys hear that we were supposed to see a Blue Origin Super Bowl commercial last night?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Huh. Yeah, this according to Page Six. It was a $20 million Blue Origin Super Bowl commercial that was pulled because the aerial footage shot for it was shot by Jeff Bezos's alleged mistress.
And oh, geez.
want the attention. And so that is why we wound up getting the Washington Post.
Super Bowl.
You can't just say whoopsies. So he had the Super Bowl spot. And so
I wondered whose pocket that money came from. I wondered if that was something Jeff Bezos saying, like, I'll spring for this, because there was a lot of criticism of the Post about, should you be spending this when your employees are asking for benefits and stuff?
It seems like this was a Bezos spend.
It was
an opportunity to do it when they all of a sudden had the real estate, because Blue Origin, they weren't going to go forward with the Blue Origin ad.
Yeah, well, I hope we get to see that. I hope we get to see it. I mean, Blue Origin's doing exciting things too, and we would. I'm wearing my SpaceX shirt, but space is awesome, and I would love us to be able to know more and talk more about what other people are doing.
I mean, considering the ads last night for the Super Bowl, without getting too far into it, pretty much fell into the silliness that we normally see versus the, like, every brand is trying to change the world, and here's. Going to explain why they're very uniquely changing the world because of a thing that they're doing. It'd be nice to see, like, space exploration kind of be there, something that would fundamentally actually change the world.
Yeah.
Not taking anything away from the fact that Kia has a factory in Georgia. Good for everybody who works at the Kia factory in Georgia. I'm very, very excited for them.
So, gentlemen.
Yeah.
You ready to dive deep into nine phenomena that science still can't explain?
Hey, man, look.
I'm tired of this. Tired of these phenomenons. Everyone keeps asking for explanations, and science just keeps coquettishly saying, no, not now.
You know what? We're done with it. Science, yeah, your back still hurts. We get it. You're just resting. You're going to be at full strength tomorrow. But you know what? We can't wait. So I guess we're just going to have to do it again. Here we are, taking out the world's scientific garbage.
What it takes. This article is by Ali Limbo for Business Insider. It was reposted by Science Alert. And first, we love this stuff. And as we explain this, we don't mean to criticize the journalistic efforts here, because, you know, you're a journalist. You got to report on everything. You can't be held accountable for explaining all these things. And, you know, you got deadlines. You got to do stuff. So we're here to explain this stuff.
Yeah, man.
First up. And notice they say that, like, though scientists may have theories about the following phenomenon, no one can say for sure why they occur. Here's the funny thing about science. You can never say why for sure. It's why it's called science and not dogma or religion.
Kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
We can keep adding and changing. And
so it just becomes to the degree of which you want to accept the explanations that are available there for you. Okay. One, scientists aren't sure why people yawn.
Oh,
okay.
I know that one. Okay. It's to show dominance. Everybody what? Loves to be dominant, and one way to do it is to look like you're screaming. But of course, screaming would attract predators, so you yawn, and then that way you look like you're screaming, and you do it very quietly. I can't believe you missed it, science. It's so obvious.
Yeah, for real. What idiots.
So there have been multiple explanations there. The most recent is the research from the Austin Institute. I'm totally not BSing you, by Brian Brushwood. could be. Others, they've noticed that it correlates with empathy, and they find it across the animal kingdom. Even reptiles, you'll do contagious yawning, you know, like, all right. So we know that it spreads. Now, there's a number of explanations for it, and probably what it is, a lot of them are true. You know, it might be a function that caught on because it served multiple functions. You know, you find out that, you know, things like your skin don't just keep the insides from the outside. They do things like produce vitamin D and do other things. And so many behaviors we have, there might be a dominant function, but there might be other things that contribute to doing this. So yawning could be an alert mechanism to signal other animals to be alert. Yawning could be a, you know, we find, like we said, looking at how it relates to other people. When you yawn, I yawn, we're all, like, you know, in cue with that. It's very, very, probably a very old animal function going back to some, you know, reptilian ancestor.
I guess that screws up, because my theory, my real theory was that it would make sense in a tribal setting to sort of help to sync everyone up. If one person yawns, that is a subconscious sign to the rest of the tribe that this person is fatigued. And then, you know, if it's contagious, you know, it could be that yawning to some degree produces hormones that get you ready for sleep. And so it keeps theoretically maybe a tribe all synced up. But if it's a precursor to non-tribal creatures beforehand, then that seems like that's less
well, there's examples that talk about paratroopers are told to yawn before they jump because it's supposed to increase your alertness after you yawn.
Huh.
You know, it could be just this muscle reflex that's like, it's kind of like a form of a stretch. And if you think you go back far enough to, you know, an animal with a much more simple muscular system, you know, a yawn opening up the jaws could be. So we have explanations. We don't know for sure why, but we have explanations as to why. So science can explain it. We just can't agree which ones. So we need to test it somehow. They show a mushroom that grows only in Texas, Japan, and scientists can't explain it. The Choreocactus geaster is the only mushroom species in the Choreocactus genus, and it's only found in Texas and Japan. The two locations are the same latitude, but mycologists have not been able to figure out why these mushrooms only grow on these two spots. They say the populations were separated by about 19 million years ago, which probably implies that when we were looking at a very, very different landscape, that it probably was in several locations across the Pacific, you know, around the Pacific Rim. And these are probably the last two spots where it's at. Not that you look and go, why is it here and over there? And like, was it elsewhere? And that it just sort of go away. We have lots of species that are across the Pacific. And so we might be looking at a species that's died off except for these last two locations.
So it has nothing to do with Tex-Mex or sushi.
No. Okay. To me, it's not. It's curious, but I don't know if it's a. We explain it, but we have a very likely explanation there as to why that is.
So the question then would be, why has it survived in these places as opposed to like why is it growing in these places?
Yeah, precisely. Then we get to this is a wonderful example of astronomy. Wonderful example of how our universe is amazing. No one knows why Saturn's North Pole has a swirling hexagon-shaped storm.
Now, that one, that is really weird. You don't tend to think of that kind of geometric precision in naturally occurring bodies like that.
Well, yes. So the problem is, and this is where I have a little bit take a little issue with this post, okay? And I'm glad they put it up there, but
I would also like to take issue with the fact that that looks like a nipple.
A nipple with a like a hydrogen atom tattoo with just like one spiraling thing around the nipple.
We get a statement in here is that, and this is full out, the only other naturally occurring hexagonal shape scientists have found is in crystals. So they have no idea how Saturn's storm can look like this. The only other naturally occurring hexagonal shape scientists have found is in crystals. The only other example in nature where we found hexagons. So example.
Yeah, that's not true, right?
No, it is one of the most frequently reoccurring shapes in nature, from bees using their honeycombs. Bubbles will form hexagons, and that's one of the things you see. When you do turbulent flow, when you actually have systems, I've made a Saturn hexagon accidentally when I was a child putting things together in my kitchen when I created some sort of oil-based thing going through this murky sort of layer. I got that, you know, so you can create this thing in nature. It's a very frequently reoccurring pattern. It sounds more mysterious, like, man, doesn't exist anywhere else. Bryce is going through all these photos of hexagons naturally occurring in nature, from the back of tortoise shells to rocks to...
Well, and most of these look like organic things. The weird ones are like, I guess the rocks could be considered, you know, minerals or crystalline or whatever. But the bubbles is a really good example because that just is, that's what you get when you get a bunch of mushy spheres together.
So, yeah, and it's cool. It's weird. It's something that we think has to do with the way turbulence works. We've seen this. We've been able to recreate this in a laboratory, creating turbulent flows and seeing how – and part of what you have to look at, it's not so much what's necessarily pushing out, but what's pushing in, et cetera. It's very cool. Not to say, oh, solved it, but it's not – we're not sitting there going, aliens or something. Okay?
Although we're not saying
– Wait, hold aliens. On. Wait. So is that the tone you're assuming is this
no.
– article is written in
not that it's aliens, but I'm saying that it's like it's not as scientists aren't going we have no idea you know, it's not some people sitting at NASA with their heads down on the table just going, ah, you got us this time, hexagon.
I'll tell you what though, I'd be curious to see what they are. I mean, it might just be like lunch and what they're going to order, but I would like to see what scientists are flummoxed by.
Yeah. And again, we don't know for sure that we I mean, it could be, but like the point is they're like, yeah, no, only occurs. And I'm like, to me, that's kind of lazy to say, you know, oh, only thing in nature that does this is crystals. It's out not true.
There is a very good journalistic point to be made that, like, you, if you are specializing in something, you should have a better knowledge of it than if a general interest reporter or somebody from another discipline is writing about it. If Page Six, for whatever reason, is writing, oh, you know, that crystals are the only place that nature forms hexagons, then it's like, all right, by and large, they're covering who's pregnant and whether or not Kendall Jenner's wearing a bikini. Maybe I can understand. If you're on a science website and you're saying stuff like that, that is something that I can understand. You want to think twice about that. That's a bad look all around.
Yeah. So we get this one. Humpback whales have gone from being solitary creatures to living in supergroups, a shift marine biologists are still trying to suss out. They talk about how humpback whales are ordinarily solitary, but they've gone to feed in packs of 20 to 200 off the coast of South Africa. Marine scientists aren't sure why the nature of this ancient creature has changed. But there's also been a rise in the population of humpbacks, so this may partially explain the change. Like, yeah, man, maybe when you hunt something almost to extinction, it's you're realizing, hey, dudes, let's not hang out so tightly packed together. Maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing with this one is that these are very, very, very old creatures. They're, I think, probably barely understood by our modern technology. I don't feel really comfortable drawing any kind of, like, large scale, like, well, they used to be alone and now they're in supergroups. I mean, who knows? This might be a fluctuating thing over the long time that they've spent on this earth, far longer than we've been able to keep an eye on them.
I mean, we went from, like maybe 10,000 or so in the entire world to now there's like 80,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Probably. And again, I'm going to get in trouble here, but I mean, they were a really great resource to be using. You know, you get a humpback whale, you get all the blubber, all the bone, all these other materials, the teeth, everything. You could use the whole thing. It was really, really like a Walmart floating out there in the ocean, you know, but probably a very intelligent species and killing ones, you know, maybe immoral. But point is, yeah, we hunted them. There weren't enough to hang out. You know, it's like asking some lonely kid sit in the middle of, you know, an empty desert, like, why don't you have any friends? You know, we moved to the Salton City because it's beautiful. Why don't you have any friends? It's like,
why don't you have any here? Friends? Actually, to perfect the metaphor, it's like, why don't you have any friends? And then killing them and then just using their for blubber.
Yeah.
And then you stop killing them and then like, hey, you got some friends. That's great. What changed? What changed? What did you do? You've been nicer now? Are you more polite?
Did I read a thing that Japan is relaxing their whaling their anti-whaling laws?
Who did? You said Japan?
Yeah, that they had anti-whaling laws and
oh wow, yeah. Look at that.
Commercial whaling.
This is December 2018. Japan confirms it will quit IWC to resume commercial whaling.
Wow. And is that is that because the populations are so great, or they're just like really hungry again? Like they were able to hold off for a little bit.
I don't know. I mean, apparently it was important. It was a big industry for them, right? Like that was like a big thing. But now I guess it's blubber's back on the menu, boys.
Yeah. No, please don't.
Yeah, I would like to make it clear that the Weird Things podcast condemns the resumption of commercial whaling.
Yeah, we do.
So just like those Super Bowl commercials, we're taking a stand.
We're changing the world.
So next up, there's no explanation for these curved trees in the Dancing Forest in Russia. Nicknamed the Dancing Forest, this area in Kaliningrad is filled with pine trees that are contorted into spirals, rings, and other configurations. They're planted in the 1960s and only tree species to ever do this.
Brian, you've spent a lot of time thinking about how to shape certain organic.
Nope, plants. Only species to ever do this.
Oh, you want to take this one, Brian?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, there's a secret curator who's going in the middle of the night and sculpting them. And by the way, thanks for stealing my idea and then doing it before I got to do it, because I was all set for the hot new trend. I'm going to launch in Portland, where I think they'll be most open to this. But you get goats, you know, you get kids with braces.
Oh my God.
You get braces for your goats. And as their horns come in, actually, there's a whole trend of this. There's actually photos of it. Someone else did have the idea, but I had the idea for braces that twist horns into a unigoat. And then I found out the unigoats are already a thing.
Oh, you know, Pliny the Elder wrote about how to do this.
No kidding.
Oh yeah. That's always like stealing an old, my ideas. Old, like, that was like an old sort of like get rich sort of thing going back to like 2000 years ago. It was like, there was like Pliny describes, like, actually his method was you actually can remove the buds when the baby goat's first born and put them in the center of the head.
A little surgery.
Yeah. Ringling Brothers and Barnard and Bailey actually had a unicorn once.
Wow. Well, now it's all ruined. It's all been done.
But we haven't seen what other species we could move those buds into.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Good point. So in this case, I assume the twisty trees come from winds or snow or just literally anything that bends trees.
Well, there's a lot of ways you can bend trees. And the idea that these are the only bent trees ever, North America, they'd find bent trees periodically, these wickedly bent trees. And it was probably the way Native Americans would mark trails. Is you just bend a tree and you just bend it like that. And then it was a really thing that lasted and stayed permanently. Here is, you can have examples of, let's say, you can have wind or you can have flooding that shifts the direction of something. And you can have water levels come. We're looking at something here and we don't quite know. We're looking at this thing one photo in time. And notice there's a little pin for holding something in back of there. So this is something where people go there. So it can be people. It can be wind. It can be water. These are not the only bent trees. These are not the only bent trees.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds cool to say that. We get to dark matter. Dark matter is like regular matter. We don't understand much about it. This is true. Moving right on. Yes. Dark matter, saying that dark matter is weird and we don't quite understand it. Not controversial.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Scientists understand how cats purr, but they're still not sure why do cats purr.
I heard a similar thing, several years ago about why dogs bark, because technically a bark, and I'm half remembering from a decade ago, but like it's technically somewhere between a cry and a howl or something, and they don't do it. You know, coyotes don't bark and wolves don't bark, but it only starts when, you know, and meanwhile, like a fox, who was a Russian dude who bred for domesticity, oh, yeah. And then they started to get floppy ears, waggy tails, and they started to bark, which is a weird thing.
Well, I heard that cats purring or vocalizing at all was for humans' sake, to communicate with humans. That's something that I heard.
Well, like lions and tigers and stuff will like purr too. And they're not, my suggestion is that, you know, the reason that they purr is a lot like why we snore. It's a really, actually tigers chuff. That's right. But some animals, other animals can do. And so I think that it can be kind of like a snore or whatever, which is a really great thing if you're sleeping to sound like a much larger predator.
Oh, that's interesting. Is that really the thought?
I mean, that's one of the explanations for it. But like, yeah. So small cats, bobcats, ocelots, cougars they can all purr. So there's no reason for them to try to please humans. And I've heard, like, I was walking through Joshua Tree and I came upon this bush once. And I heard this sound coming out of there. And I'm like, I was with a girl and I'm like, what? She didn't hear it. She didn't know what it was. She's like, what's that? I'm like, oh, it's nothing. Let's go the other way. And I'm going, what was that? And the best thing I can guess was that was a bobcat. You know, I think you know, probably a bobcat. But yeah, other cats purr, smaller cats can go purr. And so it's, you know, probably a very good, you know, it can be different techniques if you need to keep somebody away from you, whatever. Possibility. But the idea that we have no idea. No, that's not true. We have a lot of ideas. We just need to test them. So there you go. The last one is, oh no, a couple more. Fast radio bursts. We've talked about before. These are these super intense bursts of energy. Yep. We don't know. We have theories, but we don't know. There's an otherworldly looking crater in Siberia that hasn't been explained. No,
well, if it's a crater, I mean, it's aren't there two great ways to do it? One is to have something fall onto the earth. The other is to have stuff bubble out of the earth.
Yeah, well, that's the one explanation is that a steam explosion happened in, you know, during magma emplacement or hydrous rocks. They list this right here. Like, you just gave us, like, an explanation for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess, like, they're not counting really good guesses.
Yeah. Like, notice the shape of the crater. What does that kind of look like? Hexagon.
Oh, yeah, it does. You're right.
Yeah, it doesn't look unlike a hexagon. That's right.
I'm still stuck on nipple. Oh, but yeah.
With a little nipple in the middle.
It's a dun, dun, dun. Anyhow, listen, these questions are great. Science is about providing answers, and we have a lot of answers. We got to test them, though. But, you know, will we ever know for sure? No, it's not the way science works.
Yeah. Well, we're all swimming in our gigantic bathtub of half answers, and hopefully we get a little bit closer to the truth before we die.
You know what is as close to the truth as you possibly can get is we love you. We love all of our supporters. We love the people that help us out.
Heck yeah, man.
And that's why we direct everybody to go to patreon.com/weirdthings so you can support this show. Down for maintenance. But I swear to God, it'll be up by the time you go there. Patreon.com/weirdthings. It's a great place. Man, Patreon's great. It's a great place where you can put in money and then get money out. That's the greatest thing about Patreon.
Yeah, it sounds like you're describing a bank there, Justin. Are they aware that they're a bank? Are they under the impression they're a bank?
It's my favorite part. You know, I'll bet you banks don't deny people things all the time. I don't hear about it because they're too busy being a bank. They have steps and justifications, and they do things in a measured way. I have no complicated relationship with my bank beyond understanding that maybe they're investing in things that I wouldn't otherwise like. I can switch banks whenever I want. All I'm saying is that patreon.com/weirdthings is how you can support this show. Go there and stop me having to talk about Patreon.
Last but not least, you know, I mentioned a week or two ago that there's been some there was a good Medium article, and MIT, I think, just had a press release or conference talking about the push for fusion. And you know, if there's one, if you were to ask me, nobody asked, but it's fine. If you were to ask me what would be the one scientific achievement or engineering achievement we should be pushing for above all else, I would argue it would be fusion, because it'll solve a lot of problems. And one of the cool applications I saw for, you know, something fusion related, and this started, I was watching Interstellar and trying to figure out, like, hey, how do their Ranger spacecraft that they have on, like, the heavier planet just take off from the planet and go to orbit, you know? With a single stage, and like, even though they had to use like a Saturn V rocket to launch it initially, but I won't get into that. I'm like, how do these work? I'm like, Nolan, his brother, like Christopher Nolan, John, like they do their research, you know?
Yeah. And, as a matter of fact, didn't they release like a whole book, The Science of Interstellar? And in fact, they contributed, like, that visualization of a supermassive black hole was the first mathematically accurate, like it was news to even scientists that that's what it would look like when they fit in all the equations. And
you know what actually it's interesting is that like that is not like, and that was Kip Thorne who helped them with that. But that actually is an approximation, but they changed it. We think we're going to get an actual good image of what a black hole would look like pretty soon, but it's not as symmetrical as that. It's sort of this weird thing where the back flips over, whatever, but it's a pretty neat, people looked at it and go like, yeah, that's closer than what we've seen. But yeah, like I'm like, what was their explanation for how these things work? And they said, oh, it's, you know, fusion engines with blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I wonder, like, are there people thinking about if we had like, or, you know, fusion power supplies, what you would use for? And I found there's some actual cool proposed rocket technologies using fusion And then there is, we now know that there's a company that's built an air-breathing ion engine, and there's some other stuff that's kind of neat. And it's like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea. If we get fusion, you kind of get the rocket with the blue thrusters that can take off from Earth and go into orbit. We've talked about using fusion, you know, for going interplanetary, but the idea of going from the surface of the Earth to low Earth orbit, that's another, you know, animal entirely. But there's actually some, you know, I saw one company like, oh, here's our proposal. We just need to have fusion power supplies. That's all.
Well, and once you get fusion, all of a sudden you're dealing with a lot of energy. It seems like I always thought that the progress would be you use fusion to generate antimatter, and then antimatter is the most efficient of your fuels to take with you. But I mean, again, we're in sci-fi territory here anyway.
I mean, that would be. That would be an alternative approach. Would be, there's a company that we've talked about before that's working on like improved containment systems for that. And so, certainly, if you didn't want to bring the fusion reactor with you, if they were too big, you know, to scale down, it's just interesting. If you want to take a deep dive, go look at some of the different companies that are working on different fusion reactions. And one of them is TAE.com. I don't know did we mention them last time we brought this up.
I don't recall it.
Yeah. You can go there. They're building, you know, their own system for, you know, generating fusion. And I want to say that they're using beryllium as, because they want to do one of like a low amount of number of neutrons compared to other ones. But anyhow, I'm confusing them with some other fusion groups. But you go look at their facilities, what they're building on. It's incredible. I mean, they're heavily funded. They're basically build one system, take it to a certain level. Then they build the next system. So they're working on their next generation, their fusion reactor called the Norman, which is named after one of their founders, and Norman Rostocker. So anyhow, I mean, it's an exciting thing. And there's lots of other companies working on that. So
This is that they use
a boron, yeah.
Hydrogen boron PB11.
Yeah.
Ah, classic.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, the 11 is good. I mean, the 12, I'd like to see it there. It's like I have this problem where I know enough to get involved in a conversation with people who know a lot about this, and then they'll start to talk about it, and then I reach the point where I'm like, oh my god, I'm so over my head right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Hey man, I need to start making armpit noises so they dumb it down.
I got a super important pick. Can I jump into that territory?
Yes, please.
Let me explain to you this, because I don't know if you know as much as I do about my pick, which is Murder Theory by Andrew Main, which comes out tomorrow.
Oh, that's my pick too. Murder Theory by Andrew Main. Look, you might be saying to yourself, Murder Theory by Andrew Main. That's the third book in the Theo Kray series that began with The Naturalist and then moved on to Looking Glass, both of which are charting very, very high on Amazon right now in anticipation for this installment. But what I'm going to tell you is that according to the early buzz, this is not a book that you need to read two books to enjoy. No, if you want to jump in right now, you want to start with Murder Theory, the word on the street is that is exactly what you can do. Then go ahead and buy the other ones, read up on Theo Kray, understand where he came from. Murder Theory, available tomorrow on Amazon.com.
Yo, in fact, I just checked out, and I got my pre-order in, so the paperback will be showing up any minute. Very, very excited. Hey, man, congratulations. This is huge that that the series is being so well received. I know it's my favorite series of all the stuff I've read of yours. Do you have any word on audiobook on this one?
Yes.
Is it coming out tomorrow? Can I buy the audiobook?
Where did it go? Yes, there's an audiobook.
Oh, great. All right, well, here.
And by the way, Andrew. Geez, I'll tell you what, this is probably a big release here. I'm sure that you are spent on all Theo Kray, all things Theo Kray. This is probably going to be the last installment for a while, huh, Andrew?
That's true, Justin. Oh, by the way, just I want to point out, if you want to start with the series and you have it, The Naturalist, the first book, is only $1.99 in Kindle format on Amazon right now. It is currently the number one science fiction book on Amazon. Yeah, you know, I decided I wanted to pace myself, you know, because, you know, we had a...
Not according to Amazon. It claims that you have a fourth book coming out later this year.
This year! this year, not next year, not the year after that. Andrew Mayne is working hard for you. I'll tell you what, it's not just Theo who's cray. Andrew has his mind writing these books.
I never made that connection. I'm excited. The series has been a lot of fun to write. Theo Cray has been a great, great character, and I'm just so thrilled that, you know, I've been getting the support from my publisher, Thomas and Mercer, and from everybody who's been reading it. So, I mean, it's just super cool to be able to keep putting these books out there, because I've got so many stories for Theo. And this one gets dark, and the next one gets darker.
I remember you telling us, you gave us a little sneak preview, a lot of bits and pieces, so to speak, if I remember the scene correctly.
Yeah, and that was funny. When Goodreads right now, it's got a 4.7, which thrills me, is reading some of the reviews on Goodreads, and some of the people are like, oh, yeah, and there's the thing. And I'm like, yes.
And it's funny because it's like you're putting the darkest stuff you can imagine out there, probably not the most dark stuff. But then you find out, wait, the whole world is sick, just like you. Oh, you like that, do you? I'm sure Stephen King went through the same thing 40 years ago. Like, oh my God, you people are savages. You like this? All right.
So thank you very much, Brian, for the pick. Thank you, Justin, for the pick. Bryce, what's your pick?
Well, it's also, of course, going to be Murder Theory.
The way you said that, I was gonna chime in, and I couldn't
get on the hype train for Murder Theory also. But yes, check out Murder Theory. That's gonna be really great. Do you have a pick, Andrew?
Yeah. What's your pick, Andrew?
My pick is All's Well. It's been my pick for the last month, going, my pick, because I like to support my friends when they have stuff to release, is All's Well, the Night Attack comedy album.
No, that's like my wife's birthday is 2 weeks before mine. So I always like to do a big thing for her birthday. Because I know it's coming right around 2 weeks later.
All's Well is an Amazon choice.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully we'll have the last kind of little bit of data that we would need tomorrow to kind of write up everything about the All's Well experience. But tell you what, there's going to be some fun and interesting facts that we have found about, you know, how many albums it takes to kind of jump up to make a meaningful run on the charts. So stay tuned.
Hey, so I currently have the best-selling science fiction book, Amateur Sleuths, whatever, also that category, best-selling science fiction book. And it's weird because, like, I feel weird bringing that up because – you know, you don't want to celebrate your own success and you not have your friends be able to celebrate into you. So if everybody listening could go support All's Well and make it the number one. Oh, wait, it is the number one comedy album on Amazon right now. Oh, never mind. Never mind. It already is the number one album on comedy.
Hey, it's a good day, guys. This is fun. Customer images.
Oh, it's finally a comedy album.
Yeah, look at finally. That. They realized somebody listened to it.
They realized it was a comedy album and not a not spoken word and poetry.
Still, well, I love the cover because I'm looking like, oh, is this like a Peter Gabriel album? We forgot about.
By the way, did we make sure that we didn't make the Billboard charts as a spoken word and poetry album?
I don't think that they have a chart for that.
Spoken word and poetry. Brilliant.
Yeah. Because comedy is already in their others category.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Yay, us!
Hooray!
Yay! And I'm only so excited. Everybody listening knew how much self-loathing goes behind all this.
Well, and it's funny. Like this part is the hardest part to cheer for to cheer for yourself because like all of the creative work and effort. And we could talk about this in after things. I think a non-insignificant amount of that comes from that weird. If not actual self-loathing, then at least, you know, a fear that you're not good enough, that low-grade paranoia, that imposter syndrome. And then like you channel all that and you create art, and then you have to switch it off and instead just go into blind confidence mode and feel like by the way, you're great and very smart for buying my piece of art. You are making a wise investment with your money.
Pretty much. So there we go.
Yes. Let's we fixed science, and we picked the best book and the best album.
Yes. Done it.
It's been weird.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.